Welcome back.
Welcome
to Phenomenal Flicks.
Trick or treat, motherfucker. No, I'm just kidding. That's my Busta Rhymes impersonation. If you've ever seen Halloween Resurrection, it's terrible. But I want to say that now because that's a lot of fun. So welcome to our Halloween episode of Phenomenal Flicks. And I am reviewing, as you can see by the title, 2007/2008/2009's anthology horror movie Trick or Treat. I am joined once again by my beautiful girlfriend, Olivia. Say hi, babe.
Hello.
Yes, so if you listen to our top 10 favorite horror movie, horror movie episode, this was in your top 10.
It was.
And it is a lot of fun. I wanted to actually originally do like a commentary, but I feel like maybe a lot of people hadn't actually seen this movie. So I think a commentary would have been kind of silly because then you have to ask someone to put it in and then listen to us talk throughout the whole movie. And if you haven't seen it, that seems kind of pointless. So we're just going to do a normal review, but there will be spoilers because this movie's been out for 11 to 13 years, depending on what kind of release schedule you go by.
Yes.
But yeah, Trick or Treat, the really fun anthology horror comedy movie. It's directed by Michael Dougherty, and it is produced by Bryan Singer, who people would know from the X-Men movies. It stars Dylan Baker, Rochelle Adis, Anna Paquin, Brian Cox, and an array of other people that you probably have seen before or probably haven't seen before. So, Olivia, since this is one of your favorite horror movies, and I know you love Sam very much, the little kid that's on the poster of it, why don't you tell us real quick why Trick or Treat is such a great Halloween movie aside from, sorry, not Trick or Treat, Trick or Treat, because it's spelled with an R. It's such an important horror movie and Halloween movie for you.
I think that there is a couple of main reasons. And I think that the first is that it's so surprising. And I'm going to differentiate surprising and unexpected with this movie. So it's surprising just in the sense that you would think that a movie like this, particularly in an era of, like, some pretty bad horror movies, I would have to say.
Oh, yeah, the aughts had terrible horror movies.
There's very few gems to come out of the aughts in the early 2010s. So I have to say that this one was surprising. I remember when I first watched it, which was probably in, like, I want to say, like, maybe 2013. I was pretty shocked by this movie because I didn't expect it to be so good. I thought it was just going to kind of be one of those another... I was in to sit down and watch a pretty corny, not so great, quote unquote, scary movie, which probably wasn't going to be scary at all. And this one really surprised me. I remember finishing watching it and being like, wow, like that was really, really good. And it's kind of surprising just in the sense that, like, the cover doesn't really lend itself to telling you what the movie's about. And even when you go on, say, like, Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb.
Internet Movie Database.
It doesn't really lend itself to making it sound like a movie you would want to watch. But it's great, and it's also unexpected, because when you start watching the movie, you don't anticipate, unless you've read the synopsis of the movie, you don't anticipate an anthology movie, so that was really unexpected, mm-hmm. And I really like the way in which they tied each story together. I thought that the order of the movie was great, and so it was surprising, and it was unexpected, and I think that that's why I hold it so dearly to my heart, because it's pretty great.
Yeah. So if you didn't see when I posted on Instagram and Twitter the picture of Olivia for the top 10 horror movie, she was holding a little Sam in her hands. Even though it's a light-up display, we called it our son, because he's just so damn cute. But this actually became a thought in Michael Dougherty's mind back in 1996 when he created the Season's Greetings short animated cartoon, which I actually showed you after watching the movie. And it deals with this little guy, Sam. He's a little boy dressed in an orange footy pajamas look, and he's got a burlap sack on his head. And you see him walking around on Halloween night. He is stalked by a stranger, and the stranger corners him in an alley, and then a fight ensues, and you think Sam is being killed by the stranger. But Sam appears out of the alley and he's covered in blood, and then he winks and it ends. And that was a fun little short, one I had not seen until I bought the movie, and it kind of created this whole idea out of that little season's greetings episode that Doherty made. And he was able to include Sam in each section of this movie, which I'll go by the section names first. So there's an opening, it's actually called opening, and then there's a section called principal, the Halloween school bus massacre, surprise party, and then Sam. And then there's a little epilogue that ties all of them together. But the fun thing about it, as you mentioned, is everything ties together while you're watching every other part. So you see the characters from principal and the surprise party, and the characters from the Halloween school bus massacre and the Sam section. And it's a non-linear story, so you kind of have to use your thought process and probably watch it more than once to really connect, like, okay, this takes place way after this takes place, even though you see this part first. And that's a really interesting part of it. We'll go section by section. Like I said, we're going to spoil this movie because it's been out for a while. But if you haven't seen it, please do. This is an amazing movie. It's a lot of fun. It's a great Halloween movie. And I don't want you to be spoiled by what is so good about it before you go and see it.
And I think that it's so fun, too, because it's very much a grown-up version of kind of a... It's very reminiscent of two things for me, two different kinds of books, actually. So there were a couple of kind of choose-your-own-adventures that R.L. Stine wrote for Goosebumps, which I always thought were really fun. Mm-hmm. And just, like, the 800 different ways you could, like, read a story. And it's all kind of the same plot components. But then you end up with, like, a completely different ending or completely different... You get a different message out of, like, the book itself. Mm-hmm. But it also kind of is very reminiscent of sort of all of the short stories that came out of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Surprisingly enough, I've not seen the movie that they made because I read all the books and I just didn't want the movie to ruin it for me.
Just don't.
So I just think that this is just kind of a fun... If you really enjoyed those as a kid, I think that this is a fun... Halloween watch for sure.
Yeah. So the opening starts, there is Emma and her husband Henry, I believe. Emma's actually played by Leslie Bibb, who people would know from a lot of things, but I always recognize her from the first two Iron Man movies. She's the reporter that Tony Stark sleeps with and that gets called trash by Pepper Potts. That's always funny. Anyway, they are seen coming home from a party, and they're actually technically the last story, even though they open the movie. She blows out a candle or a jack-o'-lantern that's on her porch, and you actually see from the point of view of Sam, yet you don't quite know who he is yet. And what I love about this is you see from his point of view, he's hiding behind a tree across the street, and in front of the camera is kind of like you're looking through a burlap sack. Yeah. So you can see them, but you also can't see them very well, and I think that's such a clever way of doing that, because you're probably like, what the fuck is happening? And then you hear him go, like he gasps because he sees the candle getting blown out. And the whole story is, if you blow out a candle before Halloween ends, then it's bad luck and get murdered and whatnot, which is exactly what happens to Emma. She wants to take down the Halloween costumes. Her husband's like, please don't. She's just like, she literally basically tells him, go turn on the porn. I'll fuck you after I take down the Halloween decorations. And then she gets murdered. He comes out to find her dismembered and like hanging from one of these ghost things, which is just super bloody and gory. Sam's little half-eaten sucker is stuck between her mouth, and it's beautiful. I kind of want to ask you at the end of each segment, but did you find this one scary or not? Did you think it was just kind of fun and Halloween themed, or did you actually think it's like pretty creepy?
I think that, yeah, no, it was like very, I don't get very shocked by like a lot of gore horror. So, this one wasn't like super scary per se. But I think that this movie does a really good job of kind of showcasing the different types of horror. And so I thought that this was probably like a pretty good demonstration of that gore horror. So, I mean, it was fun. It was very gory.
Yeah, it's quick.
Yeah.
So then we cut to the principal section of the story, which I know is your favorite. You mentioned that in our last episode. So there is a kid, he's kind of a chubby vandal. He's knocking over all these pumpkins. His name's Charlie.
Which was the kid who, in Bad Santa.
Yeah, there's a little shit in that movie too. So he finds himself on the porch of his principal, actually, Steve Wilkins. Sorry. He's trying to steal more candy than the sign says for. And then Wilkins kind of gives him a lecture like, hey, you have to respect the rules. There's many traditions on Halloween. And the boy begins to like projectile vomit. And you think Wilkins is going to be like, oh, crap, this kid's dying on my porch. But it turns out Wilkins actually poisoned his candy that he gave him with cyanide. intercut between some of this while he's, like, dealing with this chubby kid's dead body because he poisons him to death. His child, Billy, is yelling from the back window for his dad to come in and help him grab jack-o'-lanterns while he's trying to bury this dead body in his backyard. This is also cut with another story that we'll get to later with the old man. Oh, God, what is his name? Why can I not think of it now? Mr. Krieg is his name, who is kind of like screaming at him from his backyard, telling him to keep down the noise.
Very much a Scrooge type
character. Yes, exactly. Who's played by Brian Cox, who's just amazing. Anyway, this character, Steve Wilkins, is played by Dylan Baker, who's also a great character actor. He was supposed to be the Lizard in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, but they never made a fourth one, so he never got to be. Anyway, he's trying to bury this body in his backyard, and then he goes back in to help his kid carve a jack-o'-lantern, and he grabs a knife, leads him down to the basement, and you think he's actually going to stab his kid. He puts his hand on his head and raises the knife, and you see him plunge it into something, and you're like, oh man, this kid's dead. But it cuts out, the kid's still alive, and the kid's given a very creepy look, and he's like, don't forget to help me with the jack-o'-lantern's eyes. And then it cuts to Charlie's head spinning on a Lazy Susan as they're about to carve the head. Now, I always took it as Billy didn't actually know if the head was real or not, but I know some other people are like, oh, he totally knew, and it's kind of father and son in on it.
Yeah, no, I agree with the latter, because in the end of the movie, not to, you know, spoil everything, but when it all ties together, you see his, Mr. Wilkins' son, sitting on the front steps, and he's actually dressed as his dad. That's for true. Halloween, and he's dressed in the exact outfit. So, of course, he was wearing, like, a white button-up shirt with a tie, and then khakis, and then Mr. Wilkins was, like, kind of covered in blood from Charlie's, like, puking. And then, of course, like, the little kid also was adorned with some blood on his button-up shirt. So I think that that was, like, a whole kind of indirect message to say that he was, like, in on it, and he was kind of like a mini psychopath in training, which I think is, I think I like this story the most because it has the most twists. It kind of jerks you around in a mind sense, and so I think that this one is really clever and fun. And also,
did you think it was scary?
I think it is scary because, and I think it's the scariest probably out of all the stories, and the reason why I like it so much because it's the most realistic out of all of them. So
that's true, because I was about to argue and I was like, no, she's right.
Yeah.
Because the other three aren't very realistic. I forgot to mention that the kids that we meet in the next section, Halloween School Bus Massacre, actually knock on Mr. Wilkins' door for trick-or-treat candy. But we meet these trick-or-treaters. There's Macy, Sarah, Chip, and Schrader, who, aside from Sarah, just have the fucking dumbest names on the planet. Just like, no one wants to hang out with someone named Schrader. What are you from, fucking Saved by the Bell? Like, you go to Bayside High? Anyway, they meet Rhonda, who's kind of the weird girl. She's got an entire porch full of, like, 100 jack-o'-lanterns, which is just great set design, by the way. Like, it's so cool. The group then travels to a quarry where Macy recalls the urban legend of the Halloween School Bus Massacre. So essentially, it's these special needs kids. They're in the, I believe it's the 50s, and they're locked in this school bus, and they're kind of sheltered away every day to go to this mental health school, not mental health school, but, you know, special needs school. And back in the 50s and 60s, these things weren't taken seriously. It's like you were mentally ill if you were, you know, autistic or anything of that sort of thing. So they actually pay the bus driver to kill the kids, and what he's going to do is put a rock on the school bus and have it just go into a quarry. But what happens is one of these kids breaks loose from his shackles and drives the bus himself off with the driver in it to the depths of the quarry. Now, the driver actually survives, and we'll get to that in a moment, but the whole legend is if you go down to this quarry on Halloween and you leave pumpkins, it will be as tribute to these kids. So these new kids go down there with this girl Rhonda, and they actually play a prank on her and scare the crap out of her, but it turns out the zombies are actually real, and they attack the prankster kids because they kick over pumpkins and they disrespect Halloween and whatnot. So they attack them while Rhonda viciously leaves them to their death as she takes an elevator back up to the top of the quarry, and you hear these teenagers just getting ripped apart by these zombies. And Rhonda then meets Sam, who's just sitting there watching her and is pretty much giving her a thumbs up, like, fuck yeah, Halloween. and they two part ways. But this, to me, is the scariest story for many reasons. One, because it shows the meanness of teenagers, like the, or kids in general. They're just really mean to anyone who's different. And Rhonda's like kind of a savant in a way. They call her the R word. They call her retarded. It was a different time. We're not like really saying it now, but back then everyone kind of threw it out as an insult because we didn't know any better. But it just shows the meanness of kids and how they will really treat someone who's different like shit. It also has to deal with teenagers getting murdered, which is also terrifying in a really scary way. Like this girl who, yeah, she got picked on, leaves these kids to fucking die. Even the Schrader kid who kind of had a crush on her, she's like, nah, dog, like, you're dead. And
I think it's fun, too, because all of these, like, little short stories sort of have not only a message about, like, not disrespecting, like, any Halloween tradition, but then they kind of have this moral story to them, and that is very reminiscent of the different types of stories and scary stories to tell in the dark. So this, the clear message out of this one is, like, don't bully people because then they'll retaliate.
Right.
And then you're fucked.
Yeah. But I think the scariest part of this story, and you mentioned, I said it was scary, you said it was sad, and I think it's a mixture of both, is the urban legend story, where it obviously turns out to be true, and these kids were literally killed by their parents and this bus driver because they were special needs, because they had mental health problems or, you know, mental challenge problems. So that's really fucked up, but something I unfortunately think was kind of normal back then, unfortunately, and you hear the one kid who's kind of dressed as Dracula, like the bus driver, instead of going straight down the road, turns right, and the kid immediately knows something's wrong. And he's like, wrong way, wrong way. And he's just like freaking out. And he actually leads to the death of everyone by complete accident. It's just really tragic and very unfortunate. And I think just kind of the saddest part of the whole movie, but also very freaky and very frightening. And yeah. That's the Halloween school bus massacre part of this, which actually does come back later in the film, but we'll get to that. Then we have Surprise Party, which this one is the most, I'd say, intercut in between everything, because we see these four, I'd say, 22 to 25-year-old women. Three of them are like super hot and they're going to dress all slutty and they're going to go out and meet boys and fuck them. That's the whole thing. And their sister, Lori, or one of the girl's sisters, Lori, who is played by Anna Paquin, she is like a virgin.
She's like the, I'm different.
Yeah, right.
I'm not like the other girls.
Never mind that Anna Paquin is just like incredibly beautiful and like.
Yeah, like, bitch, shut up.
Right. But she's homely. So
it's like, oh, you're homely because you have your tits covered? Like, what a revelation.
Right. And then like 2 years later on True Blood, she definitely did not.
Yeah.
But that's a different podcast for a different time. So anyway, they make you think like, oh, we're going to take you to this party. You're going to meet boys. You're going to lose your virginity. And they're called Girls from the Big City, but they come to small towns to party. Because let's be honest, small towns, aside from New York City, throw out the best like Halloween parties. Like, you want to go to a small town because it's like a tight community. Anyway, that's beside the point. So they're meeting boys like in this small town. They're taking them to this to this forest area to like, you know, hook up and drink and smoke and do all these things. Now, this is also intercut between this man dressed as like kind of a vicar, I guess you would call him.
Yeah.
And he is actually murdering this woman in an alleyway, and he bites her neck, and she starts to run away, and then people just think she's a drunk, bloody Halloween chick, and then he kills her. And then he runs into Anna Paquin's character, who's dressed as Little Red Riding Hood, and you think he kills her in the woods, and you see her body drop from a tree, but it turns out it's actually this man, and the girls are all standing over him. And instead of being scared, they're like, we're so glad you could be our sisters first. And then Anna Paquin comes out of the woods, and we get a sweet, sweet rendition of Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, while these women feast on all these boys that are in the woods with them because they're werewolves, which also gets called back in the school bus massacre thing, because you hear a howl and Rhonda goes, werewolves, and the kids are like, oh, no, it's not. Turns out it actually was.
Yeah.
So this, I think, was actually one of the most fun twists, because you're like, well, what are these women? Are they just murderers? And no, they're fucking werewolves out of nowhere.
Because it kind of sends you through this whole, like, 360 kind of loop all at once. Because you're like, so they're going to the woods, there's a fire, they're all women. Okay, it's like a witch thing. Right. Oh, no, it's not a witch thing. Oh, well, they, you know, grab his fangs out of his mouth, his fake vampire fangs, and then she kind of makes, one of them makes a smart remark about, like, oh, haha, these look so real, and, like, tosses them over her shoulder. So then you think, oh, like, they're starting to have, like, fangs come out, they look very vampire-ish, so it's a vampire thing. But then you're like, no, wait a minute, like, they're ripping their skin off, and then there's, like, fur underneath, and you're like, oh, shit, this is a fucking werewolf thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it kind of sends you through this whole cycle of, like, what is even happening?
A werewolf cycle, if you will.
Well, yes, exactly. So I thought that was a pretty good twist. That was, like, one of the most unexpected, I think.
I love the effects of them ripping off the skin and the fur underneath. Yeah, that was because cool. That skin looked real, and yeah. It was really gross, and...
It was really well done, and that's the thing, one of the surprising things about this movie is that some things that could look really cheesy... They executed so well.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost all of the effects in this movie are just done so flawlessly.
Yeah.
And I felt like in an era where there was a lot of really bad CGI, I think that this one, it seemed as though it lent itself, and I don't know exactly how this movie was filmed, but it seemed as though it lent itself much more to being a practical effects kind of movie, which I think ends up paying off, because although practical effects might be harder physically to do, I think that it ends up paying off really well because it looks really good. So I thought that a lot of the effects in this movie were done really, really well.
Yeah, I think it was really good for that. And then we see Sam watching the massacre of all these men. He's just sitting there by the fire watching it, enjoying Halloween. I actually just looked up Sam right now because, I mean, it's a little kid, essentially. And I wanted to see how old the actual actor playing him was. The guy's name is Quinn Lord, and he was born in 1999, so he was about 7 or 8 when they filmed this. So, now he's 21.
Can you imagine being a legend? Oh my god, he's, like, basically my age.
Right? And it's so funny because, like, Sam is just the cutest thing, but he's a killer.
Yeah.
Like, he will kill you, but he is so cute. Like, and you can't debate how cute he is. Very funny, though. It looks like it says on the cast right here, Quinn Lord as Sam/Peeping Tommy. So I get a little shout out of this. That's pretty fun. The next story is kind of the ending. It's the ending stinger, and it's just called Sam. And so it's intercut with the first story, not the opening story, but the principal story, as Wilkins is burying Charlie's body. Krieg, the old man, the Scrooge, if you will, is scaring away children. He hates trick-or-treaters. And his dog... starts to bark upstairs, so Krieg goes up there to see what's wrong, and his house is decorated with all this Halloween stuff, there's blood on the walls, and a fire appears out of nowhere in this pumpkin, and Sam begins to attack him by disgustingly, an homage to Pet Sematary, if you will, cutting his Achilles from under the bed, which is, that looked really good, that was a nice practical effect, and then they get in this, like, little mini fight in this man's, old man's house, so it's this little kid fighting an old man to the death. Krieg grabs a shotgun and blows Sam away. His mask comes off in this process, and we see that he's a little pumpkin man.
A little pumpkin demon. Alien.
And I love the fact that when Krieg shoots him, instead of blood coming out, it's pumpkin. And he shoots him like 4 or 5 times, and it's just pumpkin everywhere. And then Krieg goes to call the cops, but the phone line is cut, and Sam attacks him again. And he has this little sucker, and it's a jack-o'-lantern sucker, but it gets broken in a way to where it looks like a knife, which is, excuse me, what he killed the woman with at the beginning of the movie. So they fight
it
some more.
It turns out to be the end.
Right. And Sam goes to kill him, but he gets hooked on a candy bar instead of killing the old man, and he's immediately just like, fuck yeah, candy. So then he leaves him alone, which is kind of sweet and interesting. Like, you're like, oh, okay, maybe this old... You're right. You said it was a Scrooge thing. Maybe this old man discovered the spirit of Halloween. So the doorbell rings again, this man's all bandaged up, he gives kids Halloween candy, and then he goes back to the door to greet the new people that are there, but it turns out, oh, actually, hold on, I totally jumped over something. So after he's all bandaged up, he goes outside to give these kids candy at first, and you see Rhonda walking by with a wagon and a pumpkin. You see the girls back in their regular skin, enjoying their night from killing all these men as werewolves. You see little Billy dressed as his dad, as you mentioned. And then you see Sam sitting out there, and he's in a spot to where across the street you see the people from the beginning getting home, and that's when you get his point of view and whatnot. So you find out that the end is actually the beginning, or the beginning is actually the end. He goes back into his house, wants to go to sleep, but then the doorbell rings, and the zombies are there. And you get a shot of a picture in the fire, and it shows all these kids and the bus driver, and you're led to believe that Krieg is the bus driver. Cuts to credits, but you see a little comic book of these kids just ripping this man to shreds and killing him, which was so smart. Another great twist, because you're kind of left wondering, like, who the fuck's the bus driver? And then it tells you who the bus driver is, which is really cool. So what did you think of the, not only the Sam portion, do you think it's scary, do you think it's fun? And the conclusion, I guess, like, that ties everything up.
Yeah, no, I thought that this was a really clever way to end this movie, because you kind of, they kind of string you along in each one of these stories, being like, okay, well, why does this person matter? Why is this character significant? And they always give such a beautiful presentation at the end of, like, why this person ends up being significant. Because, you know, like, the whole, like, particularly, like, the mysterious vampire guy, for example. You're like, okay, well, why the fuck does this matter? And then you figure out that it's Mr. Wilkins. And,
Mr. Wilkins!
Yeah, like, Mr. Krieg. Like, you're like, okay, like, this is a crotchety old man, but, like, why does his, you know, story matter? Like, why is he significant? And then you turn, finds out at the end, like, he's the bus driver, right. So.
And during the Wilkins portion, you actually see Krieg getting attacked by Sam.
Yes.
But, again,
yeah,
like,
exactly, yeah. And so it ties it all itself all up beautifully, like a nice, neatly packaged Christmas present. And I just think that this movie is so clever and so fun, and it's a bit of a twister. So
yeah, it's just so, and it's only 80 minutes. It's like really short. It's a lot of fun, like you mentioned. You probably heard me say at the beginning of the episode, like, the 2009 or 2007 trick-or-treat movie. So this movie was actually released at Henry Knowles' Butt-Numathon, which is like a film festival. It's 24 hours. It's called Butt-Numathon because you're sitting on your ass for 24 hours in 2007. But every release that was supposed to happen, it just never did. So it kept playing at all these horror film festivals. And it was really well known between the horror community. Like, you gotta see Trick or Treat, but how do you see it unless you go to these film festivals? And then it was finally released on, like, DVD and Blu-ray in 2009, like, straight to DVD and Blu-ray. And I finally got to watch it. And it was still, like, an underground thing. Like, a lot of people were like, have you seen Trick or Treat? No, what's that? And then you would, like, show it to your friends who had never heard of it. And I would say in about 2012 to 2013, it really started to gain, like, steam. And a lot of people have seen it, and it's because of the merchandise. Like, NECA and Sideshow Collectibles have released toys, Funko has released stuff, there's been comic books, and the filmmaker became more well known, and all these things really just led to Trick or Treat kind of exploding later than it really should have. But it's like a beloved horror movie, not only in the horror community, but a lot of people I know have seen it now too. And I think that just makes this movie very special. And in 2013, Michael Dougherty said, I'm working on a sequel. That was 7 years ago.
And you know, but here's the thing. I almost don't mind. I think this movie is one of those movies that's just perfect the way that it is. And doesn't need a sequel, doesn't need a prequel, doesn't need a follow-up, doesn't need a backstory, you know, doesn't need
Well, it's got the comic books that continue with that. And, like, exactly. Of course a lot of people aren't going to go out and read the comic books, but I've read them. They're a lot of fun. They continue the story. But I agree, like, I really want a sequel, but at the same time I'm like, I don't need one. Yeah. If there's one, I will definitely see it right away.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that this is just great the way that it is. Yeah. And it's a gem. It's an underrated gem. Still, even with its growing popularity, continuously every single year. I mean, for God's sakes, like, now I have a coffee cup that's Sam. I have a little statue figurine that has a light in it that's Sam. But despite all of that, I still feel like it's one of those movies where you say, like, oh, like, I love the movie Trick or Treat. And then they're like, wait, what? So I think that if you haven't seen this movie, please do.
Yes.
It's pretty great.
I have a Charlie Brown Trick or Treat mashup t-shirt that I love, and I think it's one of my coolest t-shirts. That was a car driving by, because I haven't soundproofed my apartment yet. But, I think that shirt is super cool, and a lot of people, when people get it, they're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
But when they don't, it makes it even better, because they're like, why is Charlie Brown killing people? Yeah. And then I get to explain, you should see this really cool movie.
I think, I gotta be honest with you, I think that was the moment where you were like, I think I love this girl when I saw you wearing that shirt one day, and I was like, holy shit, your Trick or Treat Charlie Brown shirt, I love that.
That
and you
might
were like,
be
wait
true.
A minute. Yes. You know, trick-or-treat? I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Yeah. Of course I do.
And this, I'm going to kind of blow your mind on this. I don't know if you know about this movie or not. So when I mentioned trick-or-treat, another, I wouldn't say underrated horror gem in a positive way like trick-or-treat is, but a very negative way because of how bad this movie is. So there's an 80s movie. It's either 85 or 86 movie called Trick or Treat, spelled with O-R. And it's about this metal rocker in the 80s because it's made by people who have no idea what fucking heavy metal in the 80s is, of course. They're like, it's popular, so we should make a movie. So his favorite musician dies, and he summons this musician, and this musician ends up killing a bunch of people. This movie is horrendous, by the way, but it's also hilariously entertaining. And it actually has Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne, the latter of which plays a priest in it. And it's... people will think that sometimes I'm talking about this movie, so you have to differentiate Trick or Treat or Trick or Treat. And it's kind of funny. And actually, my friend Harrison, his band... named one of their songs after one of the songs that's seen in the 1980s Trick or Treat. So that's a little fun.
That's fun.
On a side note, not a side note, but just out of the horror pantheon of recognizable fillers, killers, you've got Freddy, you've got Jason, you've got Michael, you've got Dracula and Frankenstein's monster and all these things. Do you kind of put Sam in one that's like kind of lower at the bottom because a lot of people don't know who he is? Or do you think... just on sheer volume of merchandise, he's kind of popped up higher on the list. Like, even if you haven't seen the movie, you kind of know that burlap sack now.
Yeah. I think that the whole... I mean, because even now I can, like, picture in my head, like, what the cover looks like. And even, like, the... I was very... this is kind of an aside, but when you did your VHS movie store episode... that was one of the things that came to mind for me. Like, I was thinking of course, like, the Child's Play cover that he had mentioned, but then also, I remember very distinctly, like, as I got older, like, coming across, Trick or Treat once it was released widely on DVD, coming across that cover and being like, wow, like, that's just intriguing. And so, yeah, I think that it's kind of one of those images that you know it even if you don't know it. And I think that while some people who haven't seen the movie probably would put Sam on the same level as like on the same level as like Leprechaun, I think that people who do know this
is a much better movie than Leprechaun.
I think that people who are familiar with it at least somewhat, even if they haven't seen it, would definitely put him on that same level. Especially considering, like I said, I previously mentioned, like, literally at Spirit Halloween this year, they had an array of coffee cups, and of course they had, you know, like, the Jason coffee cup, and, you know, pretty much any horror icon that you could think of as sort of any sort of this merchandise, and there was quite a bit of trick-or-treat, merchandise there at Spirit Halloween. It was a significant section of it, at least, so... I don't know. I think that this is a weird thing where I feel like I've known of this movie for so long, but now it's just kind of coming that thing where, I mean, I saw like TikToks of people putting their kids in a Sam costume, and I mean, it's adorable and horrifying at the same time. Excellent. And it's like, I love this.
That leads to my next point. So we already mentioned how cute he is, but would you say that Sam is the cutest horror character of all time?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
If you haven't seen this kid, he is so fucking cute. Like,
so cute.
You don't realize how cute he is until you see him in action. The way he walks, the way his little movements are. He's just adorable.
His little sighs and like his like little kid noises, because like even as he's like fighting Craig, he's like making these like how it sounds when little kids like fight. Yeah. You know,
but he's also terrifying and scary.
Yeah, he's like, and then he like, you know, his face is exposed, and then it's like this creepy pumpkin alien type thing, but then of course when he puts the mask on, it's like this cute little
tiny baby. He leaves away with a Halloween bag and he's eating a chocolate. Yeah. And it's just like, he's a kid. You forget that he's pretty much a kid, but he's also the spirit of Halloween.
It's so cute too, because like that scene where he's about to kill Mr. Krieg, and he like hits him, and then, you know, Mr. Krieg shuts his eyes really quick, and then of course you see Sam's half-eaten sucker plunged into this candy bar, and then of course, as a little kid does, he gets so sidetracked with the fact that, oh, there's a candy bar in front of me, and then he just eats it, and then just like hobbles away, and it's the most adorable thing.
He goes, ooh, piece of candy.
Exactly.
All right, Olivia, what grade would you give Trick or Treat? And maybe next week, next year for Halloween, we'll do Trick or Treat.
Oh, God.
And you can see the garbage fire that that movie is.
Okay, so I have to give this movie an A, just because
it's... Just an A?
I think A+ is pretty hard-hitting. I think that this movie gets a solid A. I guess my only wish is that this would have been widely released in theaters, but unfortunately that's not the treatment that this film got. And I think that it's been really clever over the years how they've been able to kind of revitalize this movie and make it really popular by merchandising it, and that just shows you the power of capitalism, I guess.
Yeah, I also forgot to mention they did a lot of Halloween Horror Night stuff with Trick or Treat at Universal Studios, which, again, is going to just up its brand, and people are going to be like, I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
And they went out and did. So I give this movie an A+. I think this is the second best Halloween movie of all time.
Wow.
You guys know what my first is, obviously. And I have so much fun watching this movie every time I watch it. And I notice new things every time I do. Like, at the beginning, I didn't realize, like, even before we get to the couple getting, or the woman getting murdered at the beginning, I didn't realize that you see the principal at the very beginning of the movie. I never noticed that before, and I've seen this movie numerous times. And you see every main character in a quick shot at the very beginning, and I never noticed that.
And I think it's just one of those where it has so many twists, and most people would argue, oh, it's like one of those movies that you like watch and then you figure out the twist and then you never watch it again. But this is one of those movies, like you said, like you notice something new every single time. And it's almost like one of those choose your own adventures where even though it's the same story, by being able to pick up all those like smaller pieces that you didn't notice beforehand, it kind of makes it a whole new, you know, it just the care that goes into this plot, the way that it is written and the way that it is shot is just immaculate.
Yeah, it's a great movie. So check it out, please. And thank you guys for listening to Phenomenal Flicks, or my entire month of horror movies, Phenomenal Frights. It's a lot of fun to do some of the stuff I did. Of course, I had Olivia on here twice. Yeah, twice. Yes. I had Mike and Ryan both on for some really great episodes. Go back and listen to those. And then I did some horror reviews as well, including Adam Sandler's Hubie Halloween, which... of the new movies I reviewed this month, that was probably the best, which is sad to think. But that's probably due to the COVID pandemic. So I'm actually not going to have a new episode on Tuesday because Tuesday is the election. And I think we have far more important things on our plate than listening to me talk about movies for about 15 minutes. So please go out and vote. Wear your mask, socially distance. Please vote. Please fucking vote. I will be back on the 10th of November with a new movie review. But I will not be doing one on the 3rd because I don't even think I would have the energy to. So, yes, do that. Follow Phenomenal Flicks, of course. Follow 2 Week Media. Follow That's Gotta Be Wrestling. You can find all those on Instagram, Twitters, and Facebook. Thank you, Olivia, for joining me. And I will see you guys on November 10th. Have a good night and stay
phenomenal.
Thanks.